If you look at a software-defined vehicle as a platform that evolves, similar to a phone, that may be the case, where a vehicle that's basic purpose is to get you from point A to point B, but it will be able to do so much more, right? It'll integrate into what we call your digital life.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. On today's show, I am joined by Jeffrey Chow. He is the CEO of Sonatus, a US-based company founded by IT veterans, basically looking at solutions and technologies around software-defined vehicles and OEMs, something that I had no idea about before this conversation. So hopefully you'll learn along with me. One person who might know what all of that meant beforehand is George Lynch, who's joining me back home in Glasgow. How are you?
Great, Dave, and yeah, great to see you again. The last time I spoke, I think I was in Delhi.
Yeah, you're about to introduce the Indians to whiskey.
Yeah, that went well, I think. and it was a great time in Delhi, meeting colleagues there, and then travelled to Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam for a few days, and then back home. So first day back in the virtual office in Scotland.
And you're not feeling too tired?
Somewhat jet lagged, but not too bad. The weather has brought me down to earth quite quickly in Scotland today, so I know exactly where I am in the world.
Thing is, to anyone who doesn't know, Scotland is a beautiful country. My brother-in-law lives in Glasgow. My uncle lived in Glasgow for many years. My mum and dad from Northumberland, which isn't much further south, to be perfectly honest. And the problem is, beautiful, but summer is literally 2 weeks in June or July.
Yeah. And you better be prepared to catch it when it's there. But yeah, back with a bang, back with a mist.
There's a really good segue for something that I'll just mention very quickly. Mist and thinking about weather. Scotland, good kind of credentials for green tech. On Friday's show, we were talking to Mott, who are using robots basically to try and fix the crisis of water leakage in the mains infrastructure in the USA. Interestingly enough, over the weekend, there was an article in the FT talking about water tech being the next big potential market. Interestingly, there is just $1 billion unicorn, a Boston-based company called Gradient, who are a water tech unicorn versus many green tech. And the FT are just basically highlighting it as a sector that's ready for growth and ready for people to grasp opportunities. So I'll stick that in the show notes if you're interested to read, but a nice little additional piece following our chat with Zach on Friday.
Yeah, sounds very interesting.
Anyway, we will hand over to our interview with today's guest, Jeffrey, and myself and George will be back afterwards to have a quick chat. So today I am talking to the CEO and founder of Sonatus, Jeffrey Chow. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. Really excited to be here.
And where are you joining us from?
I'm joining us from the Silicon Valley in California. That's where our company is based. That's where our headquarters is, and that's where most of our employees reside.
So before we get into anything else, who is Sonatus?
Who is Sonatus? Sonatus is a company that is on the cusp of this huge revolution in mobility, where it's starting in automotive, and it's called software-defined vehicle. So we're here to introduce and help OEMs and tier one suppliers on their journey from what we used to call hardware-defined vehicles to this new world called software-defined vehicles. And I think it's interesting because myself and a lot of our employees here and our team members have been part of this kind of transformation across multiple industries beforehand. Media companies, finance, retail, every industry has gone through a transformation, a digital transformation, and now it's automotive. And so it's really exciting to be able to start a company and be on the forefront of this, the same disruption that we've seen in many other industries, but now it's in automotive.
And look, when you talk about a software-defined vehicle, I imagine people could hazard a guess what we're on about, but let's make sure that we're on the same page. What are we really talking about here?
Well, let's maybe start with the past, which is perhaps you could call it a hardware-defined vehicle. And a hardware-defined vehicle is a vehicle that has a very fixed architecture and a very fixed set of components, where every component was basically vertically built, right? You had some software, obviously, you had hardware, and they were each built with a particular function in mind. For example, your transmission, or your drivetrain, or your window rolling, or your seat control, right? Or your body control. So each one of those functional domains had what we used to call, and we still call, ECUs, electronic control units. And they were single purpose hardware software silos that an OEM would integrate across multiple suppliers, right? So you had one supplier that maybe built a particular body control unit, and you had another supplier that built a particular drivetrain unit. And the OEM, the automobile manufacturer, would basically take all of those parts and integrate them into a vehicle. So that kind of architecture and that kind of solution and implementation was very static, if you will, right? So an automobile maker would need to define what the vehicle can do, define what power seats they want, right? What in-vehicle entertainment system they want. And they would take that component, integrate it, and it would be very static. It would be fixed. And if you wanted to add a new feature to a car, it was very difficult, if not impossible, to do. And you had to basically wait to the next model year or the following model year if you wanted a different car, if you wanted a new feature, right? That's why they have model refreshes so often.
Is this almost as being kind of quite blunt, I suppose, a bit like moving from so-called dumb phones to smartphones and kind of the effects that apps had on phones, the ability to basically download something onto your phone, any app that you want that gave it extra capabilities? Is it as transformative and as could it be kind of related to that similar shift in mobile 10 or 15 years ago, but happening within automotive? Or is that too basic a kind of a comparison?
No, that's a great analogy, because phones in the past were not updatable. They were static. They had one function, right? You can make a phone call, you could receive a phone call. And that the phones kind of evolved into being able to do multiple functions. But the early phones still were not updatable. They were still, you bought a phone, it had several functions, but the functions never changed, right? You couldn't modify them. You couldn't add new functions. And phones have evolved to what we call a platform, where that platform evolves over time. So being updatable is one of the attributes that you just described in phones, and that attribute is part of what a software-defined vehicle is. Is a software-defined vehicle is updatable like your phone. And when you're talking about how do you update a phone or a vehicle, a software-defined vehicle, it's through software. It's really hard to update hardware. So very rarely do you take your car in and swap out an ECU or component, and all of a sudden you get more horsepower, right? Or your windows behave differently, or you get a new function, right? Or your brakes are optimized. Basically, the car is as you bought it, and it can't be changed. And that's exactly what phones were like, you know, many, many decades ago. And so now you have a software-defined phone, if you will.
So if we take that analogy one step further, you know, the iPhone came out and totally changed what a phone was to most people, a smartphone was. And arguably now the phone aspect of it is one of the least utilized parts of a smartphone. You know, if you think about Gen Z, they don't really like talking on the phone, according to a lot of different surveys. They find it quite anxious. What do we think software-defined vehicles mean for the automotive? You know, I mean, is it going to be the case that as we're seeing in San Francisco with driverless vehicles and taxis, that actually the driving aspect of the car is going to become one of the least interesting aspects of it.
I think that's a very interesting thesis. And certainly, I think if you look at a software-defined vehicle as a platform that evolves, similar to a phone, that may be the case, where a vehicle that's basic purpose is to get you from point A to point B, but it will be able to do so much more, right? It'll integrate into what we call your digital life. Your digital life in simple terms, yeah, everybody has a digital life. Your media, your data, what kind of music you want to listen to, all the applications you might have, how do you work, how do you play, how do you learn? That to us is your digital life. And there are many gateways into your digital life, right? Your phone is one of them. Your computer is another one. Your house is becoming one, and we believe your vehicle is becoming one. It'll be a gateway into your digital life, which means it's not just about traveling from point A to point B, but it's also how you live your digital life. How do you receive your data? How do you update your data? How do you interact with your applications like your music? How do you communicate, right, from one person to another or for across a group? How do you interact with your social media? That's your digital life, and your car is becoming a very important, what we call, gateway to your digital life, because you spend so much time in your vehicle. For some people, maybe you spend more time in your vehicle than you do at home. And plugging into that digital life is going to be very important. So absolutely, I think we see it more as a platform, as a gateway into your digital life, as much as it is a method of transportation from point A to point B, because you spend so much time in your vehicle.
And what does that mean for a company like Synatus? I mean, I was lucky to sit through one of the OEM's media conferences when I was at CES, and they were talking about software-defined vehicles. I suppose an automotive company is coming at this from one direction, and you could effectively have a software business that is dealing with automotives coming from a different direction. And you might have slightly contrasting views of what the future holds, right? And the type of people that you've got building this software versus the type of people that they might have and the experiences that they have.
Yeah, when we started Synatus, a lot of the founding engineers came from a different industry. It came from the IT industry. And IT industry being cloud companies, whether it's Amazon or Google or Microsoft, being infrastructure companies such as a Cisco or a NetApp or an EMC or Hewlett Packard, right? Many of these IT companies approach software-defined technologies in a slightly different way. And if you are aware of the history of the IT industry, software-defined technologies was born in the IT industries back in the early 2000s. And so the technologies that came out of the data center and the IT industry and the cloud industry really defined what that software-defined technology meant in terms of how it worked, what the value proposition was, why it was better. And what Synatus is doing is bringing some of that technology, that philosophy, from that industry to the automotive industry, because we do see these two industries as merging, right? There is a marriage between automotive mobility and IT technologies. So the software infrastructure, the software architectures that we designed and pioneered in the IT industry is a very natural fit for automotive as automotive is going through this transformation. And of course, it's not exactly the same, because on the flip side, software and architectures inside a vehicle are very different, right? It's a very different environment. It has very different requirements around safety, for example, and reliability. Generally speaking, the hardware resources that you have in a car obviously is much less than the hardware resources you have in a cloud. So how do you take that software architecture and those software principles and technology and apply them to a vehicle. It's very different. And that's why we see that both sides need to adapt and come together and create what we call a software-defined vehicle.
Hmm. Now, look, when I was at CES in Vegas, I went to your booth, and one of the demonstrations I was given was how your software could turn the lights on the rear of a car into a visual aid for the driver behind and giving more instruction in terms of what was going on at the on the road ahead to help safety. And obviously the software was very much tailored towards helping improve the safety of that driving experience. Gary Shapiro, the head of the CTA, talked about the car being this ultimate entertainment unit. Obviously, that's two slightly different views of where we're at right now. Where do you think we might reach this tipping point where I suppose the software is thinking about driver safety versus driver entertainment? Is there going to be a tipping point, do you think?
I think the vehicle is going to be all of the above. The whole point of a software-defined vehicle is that it's flexible, right? And that's the other attribute of a software-defined vehicle. It's not just updatable, it is flexible. It is a platform that does many things. And being a digital entertainment device is one of them, but also being a safety device is another one. And I think there are many other applications and functions that will come together and coalesce into this platform. So I think all of these visions are correct. And frankly, if you talk to 10 different automotive people, you'll get 15 different answers on what a software-defined vehicle is. And when we look at and listen to all of that, we believe that everyone is correct. And the software-defined vehicle is different to everyone, but that's inherently why it's a flexible platform, right? So it's all of the above for sure.
You mentioned there that you could talk to 10 different people and they would have 10 different views and they could all be correct. However, you as a business, you as a leader of that business, where do you see the emphasis being right now? What are you working on that you think demonstrates where the industry is at right now?
I think we're very early in this transformation because it will take time. There are fundamental technologies and mindset in an industry that has been well rooted for decades in how they do things. And whenever you're transforming an industry, it's going to take time. It's an evolution, right? We're not going to get from point A to point Z in one step. It'll be step by step. So we're fairly early in that transformation. And where Synodis is starting is we're building the foundation layers. And we're laying down those foundational capabilities, and we are building new technologies, new solutions on top of that gradually. Because every automotive company will be in a different period of their transition and adoption of new technologies. And one of the things that we're doing as we are building out our software is we're focusing on a few solutions to begin with. Right. You've seen at CES, we showed things like dynamic lighting, where you could change the lighting in your vehicle for safety or for notification, and in some cases for entertainment. That there are other solutions that we're building, like personalization, a big value proposition that most OEMs are looking into to provide their customers is how do you personalize your vehicle and make it very easy. And take that personalization experience from vehicle to vehicle to vehicle, because we have seen that a person isn't tied to one particular vehicle. They want to change vehicles. Maybe they get into a ride share. Maybe they want to lease a vehicle or rent a vehicle on vacation. How do you take their persona and move them from vehicle to vehicle to vehicle very simply, very seamlessly, right? That's another solution. That is one of the first applications of a software-defined vehicle that Synodis is working on. There are others. One is diagnostics. So today, vehicles, when a customer is having problems, for example, what's the first thing they do? They call the dealer and they take their car and they spend half a day and they pull their car into the into the service center, and the service technician has to plug some wires in, download data, run some diagnostics, and try to figure out what's going on. And if your luck is like my luck, most of the time they can't figure it out. And they go, oh, you know, go take the car back and drive it around. And when the problem happens again, then come back, right? What a pain in the butt that is. So imagine being able to do this dynamically. So imagine being able to do this where maybe you call into the dealer, but the dealer says, look, let me do things remotely. Let me debug this remotely. Why don't you keep driving your car around? And when the problem happens, I'll know exactly what the problem is, and I'll be able to order parts ahead of time if that's what you need, or I'll be able to update the vehicle with a software update and fix the problem, right? That's part of a software-defined vehicle as well, and that's a solution that we're working on. So there's all of these specific solutions that you can build on top of the foundational software that we have that's in production, and bring value to your customers from day one, right? You don't have to take that huge step from point A to point Z. You can start introducing these small bite-sized solutions that would add a lot of value to not just your customers, but to your dealer network, to your suppliers, even to adjacent partners like insurance companies. One of the solutions we bring to partners like insurance companies is access to the appropriate data. So the third attribute that we talk about in the software-defined vehicle, right? The first two was flexibility and updatability. The third one is that a software-defined vehicle is data-driven, right? Everything is about data today. So imagine a partner that needs a certain kind of data at a certain time, like an insurance company. How does an auto manufacturer service those partners? Well, another solution that Sonatus is providing, that's also in production, by the way, is allowing an automaker to have access to particular data, specific data, targeted data that improves the quality of their data when they want it, right? And they can adjust it dynamically over time. They can adjust it real time. And they can provide it to interesting parties. Maybe it's to an insurance company. Maybe it's to one of their suppliers because their suppliers are having problems with their brakes, right? Maybe it's to an R&D engineer inside an OEM that tries to figure out, oh, you know, we spent all this time putting a feature in and we don't even know if our customers is using it, right? One example I'll give you that we did talk to an OEM is the sunroof. You know, sunroofs tilt and they open, and it costs money to put that feature in, actually, right? They know that sunroofs are always used kind of when you roll it all the way open and closed, but they don't know if people actually use the tilt function. What happens if the R&D engineer and maybe the procurement department in an automaker are able to get data on how often that tilt function is being used? And if they determine it's not being used, maybe they can save that money and put it into another function, for example, right? So data is really important. And that's one of the other solutions that we've built on top of our foundational software.
Picking up on data, let me just run with something very quickly and then try and come to a question off the back of it. You mentioned about the idea of the car being flexible and you being able to take your experience from one vehicle to the other. I have a car at the minute, an automotive that you would absolutely describe as being hardware defined. And I quite like it. I quite like the way the gearbox, I drive, you know, I'm British, I drive a manual, quite like the way the gearbox is, and it's my car, right? And that's not necessarily a healthy relationship to have with a vehicle where the planet's concerned and sustainability. Could the idea that, you know, it's not necessarily about the way that you drive the vehicle, because maybe you're not driving it in a few years' time, but you're able to log in to another vehicle, any vehicle that you step into, break that chain of ownership and create a more positive relationship from a sustainability function? I don't know. I just wondered if you had some interesting data around sustainability as a business and where that might be leading you in terms of green solutions.
Yes, I think as we move from a hardware-defined world to a software-defined world, one very obvious sustainability benefit is that the hardware, in many ways, is going to consolidate, get simpler, because more and more functions are going to go into software. So the whole process around manufacturing individual components that are different from car to car is going to be lessened, right? And then you will have common hardware platforms that are more green and more sustainable and more leverageable across the entire industry. And more of the complex functions that take perhaps complex manufacturing in the past will be done in software. So as more functions move from hardware to software, I think their software inherently is more sustainable, right? And that's going to be pervasive across this industry. And that example that you gave is actually quite interesting. Here's another transformation that we're seeing. So the new generation, like my kids, okay, they for some reason, they don't really care as much about owning a vehicle. That, you know, ride sharing has proven that. My two daughters don't care to own a car. They just want to get from point A to point B and interact with their digital life while they're doing it. So there's this term that we've heard called mobility as a service or transportation as a service, right? Everything is as a service these days.
Yeah.
So if you imagine transportation as a service, that means the ability to get from point A to point B is a service, right, that you can use. And one model is ride sharing, which, by the way, is sustainable because there are fewer cars on the road, right? And another way is some programs that some OEMs are trying out, which is kind of the Netflix model of old, where, you know, maybe you have a car that you want to use for a couple of days, but you don't want to own it. And after you're done with it, you want to turn it back in and maybe get a different car next week, right? Maybe you want a all-wheel drive because you're going up to the mountains this weekend. But when you're done, next weekend, maybe you want a luxury sedan, right? So why own a car? You could potentially have a service where you have access to a fleet of cars and you can trade one in and pull one out as you need it, right? That's another ownership model, if you will, that is being experimented. And that's definitely sustainable because, again, you have less wastage on the road, if you will, right? You have fewer vehicles. I wouldn't say the vehicles are less important. They're just as important, but the ownership model has changed, right? Your relationship with your vehicle has changed, and that will result in more sustainability for the environment, for our society.
Look, some fascinating ideas and trends there. I really appreciate you giving up some time today to have a chat to me. If someone wanted to find out a bit more about Sonatus, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way is to go to our website. So www.sonatus.com. You'll find a lot of interesting information there, and you can definitely reach out and contact us through the website. We also have social media presence on our LinkedIn, so you can reach us there. We'll be at a lot of trade shows. So CES was a big deal for us. We're there every year, but we also are involved with a lot of other conferences across the globe in EMEA, APAC, North America. So you'll be able to visit us and talk to our local teams there. We are a global company. We have sites across the world. Because we're in production with a major OEM, we've got millions of vehicles on the road. So I think hopefully, anybody who's interested in reaching us, hopefully will find it easy.
Well, look, thank you again for your time and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you for having us.
Right, George, software-defined vehicles. When I went to Vegas, CES, CES is the world's largest technology show. I mentioned when we did a presentation recently together in Glasgow that it's also the world's largest automotive show now. And that is in large part to this concept of software-defined vehicles. Is it something that you find yourself talking about at all or not?
So the concept of various IoT devices and various hardware platforms is something we talk about a lot, but it tends to be not mobile. It tends to be static, retail, yep. for example, or logistics lines in factories or big warehousing solutions. So we, you know, certainly had lots of discussions about that in general, but not specifically in software-defined vehicles, which I thought was extremely interesting as a concept. Never mind the concept, actually. They have something that you kind of go, oh, there are many, many practical applications of this in the industry. So it's one of those ones where as soon as you hear about it, you go, oh of course. Of course, yeah. It's obvious once you hear it.
And it's one of those things as well that you kind of realise it's going to have a profound impact on what we're delivered in our vehicles. Funnily enough, this week, Wednesday, I have an electric vehicle turning up at my house because I didn't realise that our business, Nash Squared, like many it seems, have a benefit scheme with Octopus electric vehicles. Octopus has gone from being, you know, a startup growth kind of SME to being the second largest provider of energy in the UK. And it would appear that they've done that by thinking, right, electric vehicles is a real avenue into getting people to switch over to our service. They're kind of rivaling British Gas, who've got a 200-year head start. So it's some growth. But the car that's turning up is a Polestar. And you look at the cabin and the middle of the display is Android Auto. And it comes with 3 years worth of internet access built in. So you realize that we're not, you know, this is really kind of stuff that's here and now.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting that one of the things I think it's really powerful here is that my understanding is, generally speaking, the software that is in cars these days is generally open source and not proprietary. So it allows for, it's kind of an open architecture so that the ECUs that are tied to specific hardware elements of the car can communicate in an open format. And that just makes it really interesting. I was really interested in some of the concepts that was discussed in the call. And what came to mind was the concept of the digital twin. So effectively, you have a digital twin of the vehicle. We also have a digital twin of yourself as a driver. So this concept of personalization and Netflix was really interesting, where you could take, you know, your favorite radio channels, the way you like, you know, the aircon to work, maybe some of the balance between front and back drive. You could take that and then take it to whichever vehicle that you happen to be in any given day. I think that's a big game changer, particularly for a much more modern driver. And it was mentioned in the call, you know, that not necessarily everybody wants to own a car these days. Even the concept of leasing a car, it will become less and less. It'll be about at point of demand. You know, when do I need a vehicle? And is that vehicle therefore personalised to my particular driving style, etc.? I just thought it was, you know, that is the future. But the point is we have the platforms now to make that possible. So it's really, I thought it was just really quite, not even, so I call what was being done by Sonatus evolutionary, not revolutionary. They're just evolving. They've just clearly figured out a way in which this is the next logical step in terms of the marrying between software and hardware and vehicles. So, you know, really interesting.
And that marriage piece, given the space that you work in, that must be fascinating because the conversations that they're obviously having with the OEMs, I didn't know what an OEM was prior to kind of diving into this. So original equipment manufacturer, say you are a traditional automotive business and all of a sudden you're kind of stepping into this software space, it makes sense that you've got Sonatus, right? Because the infrastructure, the architecture involved, when you're talking about vehicles that are, you know, you referenced at the beginning kind of IoT devices, but they're static, they're stationary. These things are moving and interacting with each other. That's a whole different level of complexity and security and privacy and data.
And therefore, Sonatus and others can provide that degree of specialism so that OEMs can stick to what they're really good at, which is engineering of really great vehicles and fuel-efficient cars and You know, they can focus on being what they're really good at. Sonatus and others, and Nashtec itself, who are a software dev company, can offer their level of experience and expertise. And it was interesting that the Sonatus themselves were a bit of a mix of different types of disciplines coming together to solve the problem. It was actually really interesting, and the degree, the concept of, you know, flexibility, updatability, and being fundamentally, and this is something I really picked up on, was data driven, right? Because I was listening to the interview, and I was going, oh, yeah, at some point data is going to have to come up. And of course it did, right, you know, towards the end, which is really heartening and good that we, that you guys got to that part. And the link to insurance companies and insurance premiums. And we know in the UK, and in fact worldwide actually, insurance premiums have gone up dramatically recently. And at Nashtec, we deal with a lot of insurance companies, and it'd be a very interesting journey they might be on in terms of how they leverage all that information that's coming from software, software-defined platforms.
I mean, it's funny that jumping into that slightly more kind of crystal ball gazing piece, but when you start talking about insurance, for a long time, people have said, you know, with the advent of driverless vehicles, are we going to get to the point where, you know, driving is banned? And I've heard a lot of people say, no, driving's not going to get banned, but all that's going to happen is you're going to get priced out as the kind of the human meat bag behind the wheel.
Yeah.
The computer will be better at driving that vehicle. And you can almost see in the industry with a move to software-defined vehicles being entertainment-based, digital lifestyle, you know, all right, if you're not going to be driving it, what else can we offer you? Mm. Because if insurance is going to price you out and say, you're far more dangerous than the computer, therefore to insure you costs 10x.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to make this somewhere that you want to spend time and is interesting for other reasons.
Yeah, and yeah, so you're right in the crystal ball side. We, you know, there's a certain direction of travel, pardon the pun, where there'll be less driving will be for leisure purposes only, rather than for, you know, a genuine
A to B.
A to B. Yeah. You know, it'll be a case of, I quite fancy driving today, so you might get insurance for that day, and that insurance for that day may be based on behavioural stuff that's gathered in your digital twin has moved around different vehicles and your driving style, and insurance companies can give you, you know, literally insurance on the day. That's me just spitballing there, they've got to say, but it's kind of
but it's rational. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Really interesting.
I think my mother-in-law, who's written off several tires recently because she keeps hitting islands, her premiums.
Yeah. Yeah. There's pricing for pricing out of the market for various reasons. And one of those might be it. But then again, you think about when we get driverless cars, there's always this, you know, maybe going slightly off topic, but this sense that older drivers drive for too long and put themselves and others at risk, but they still want to be mobile. The point is they want to be mobile. They want to not be reliant on others.
It's a massive thing. I remember my grandma, when it got to the point that her eyesight meant that she couldn't drive anymore, she'd always been fiercely independent. So if you've got a car that offers you the alternative of, here's a vehicle that gets you from, maybe you don't even have to own it, it just turns up, but it's something that you can use to get around, that's a massive plus.
Yeah. So I think ultimately we'll get to much more mobile, older generation because... Mm. You know, in part to what Sonatus are doing. So, yeah, it's a really interesting subject, I've got to say.
Yeah. Well, look, George, thank you for joining me on today's show. I know that you're probably still readjusting to the time zone. So I hope the beginning of the work week isn't too brutal for you. Yeah. We'll have you back on the show on Friday. On Wednesday's show, we're going to be talking about something entirely different. We're going to be heading over to Copenhagen for a chat with Tech Barbecue, which is an innovation-based startup conference that's being hosted there in September. But until then, thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot.
Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.